This is Hans Scheil from the Finishing Well podcast. On Finishing Well, we help you make godly choices about Medicare, long-term care, and your money. Your chosen Truth Network podcast is starting in just seconds. Enjoy it. Share it. But most of all, thank you for listening and choosing the Truth Podcast Network.
This is the Truth Network.
This show is brought to you by Generous Joe's, the coffee company with the Christian perspective. This is the answer that Christians and conservatives have been looking for. A coffee company that gives back to causes you care about. Order your coffee today at shopgenerousjoes.org and even subscribe to a subscription coffee plan and never forget the coffee you love or the causes you care about.
Get ready. It's one of America's most important, influential, and respected voices on cultural and political issues. An apologist, Christian political advocate, and author. Here is the founder and chairman of the Citizens for America Foundation, Dr. Chris Hughes.
Welcome to the Christian Perspective, where we look in God's Word in order to develop a Christian worldview in modern culture. I'm Chris Hughes, and today's guest is a retired lieutenant colonel from the United States military, and she's continued to serve. You know, that's the great thing about military people is they understand what service is, not just them, but their families as well. And when she got out of the military, she decided she wanted to continue to serve our nation, and she decided to do that by serving in public office. She's now a member of the Arizona State Senate, but you're going to see her in the coming weeks all across the nation. She's a real leader, and she's fighting on the forefront to protect election integrity. Senator Wendy Rogers, thank you for being with us today.
Chris Hughes, it's my honor. I'm talking to you from my home in Arizona. We've been on the road, as many of you know, for 5 weeks. We got back this past few days ago on the weekend, and it's good to be home, I have to say.
I bet you're glad to finally sleep in your own bed. I travel a lot, too, not as much as because you're really hot right now traveling all across the country, but it is so nice to get home and just be in your own bed sometimes.
It sure is. It's pretty hot here, though. I mean, it's a dry heat, as they say, but it's still blistering hot. And we are on fire figuratively here in Arizona, waiting for the audit report, which will be very soon. And, you know, just keeping all of that at the forefront of people's consciousness is very, very important right now.
Well, you know, there are a lot of questions across the country right now about election integrity, and I know that a lot of different states have talked about auditing the election because many people that we believe, and not just in the presidential race, but others that probably won their elections because of different shenanigans ended up not getting certified in the end. And I know the real battle has been in Arizona and started there and is spreading across the country. So tell us how you entered this particular battlefield and what's happening in Arizona and across the country.
Well, I was elected last November, and so I'm the newest Republican state senator. We have a very tenuous one-vote majority. There are 30 state senators in the state Senate for Arizona. 16 are Republican, 14 Democrat. And so if a Republican Senate colleague of mine has a bad day and decides to vote with the Democrats that day and it comes out 15-15, a bill simply doesn't pass. We don't have a tiebreaker as the U.S. Senate has. So this is a very tricky situation we are in, and yet because of this one-vote majority, we were able to carry out the audit, which began some months ago. So I got sworn in January and saw this, you know, unfold, this audit process. It was quite an interesting spin-up to it because there is no one-stop shop to find a company that audits a presidential election, needless to say. And so my colleague, Senate President Karen Sand, who's also a rural state senator, as am I, and there are very few of us, out of the 30 total senators in Arizona, only 7 of us represent rural districts. And so anyway, she is a very tenacious, strong woman, business owner for 30-some years, and so she was very adroit in handling the spin-up to the audit to select the companies and so forth that participated. So many of you may have followed this to some extent. We had this huge undertaking with thousands of people involved to do an audit, and we had to rent the Phoenix Coliseum down at the fairgrounds, huge venue, where we counted and recounted the ballots. You probably saw the colored Lazy Susan style tables that the counters would sit at, five individuals, three of whom would be volunteers from Maricopa County. They had to have been voters in the 2020 November election. They were vetted, background checked. We had over 2,000 of such volunteers. And tonight, I'm going to a reunion party, I guess you could say, of audit workers. I'm kind of a honorary member because I went down there so often. But and I'll see Karen Fad tonight. But anyway, this was a huge undertaking. Not only were the ballots counted and recounted and chronicled and cataloged and minutely accounted for, but each ballot was also forensically examined. So we're talking about a camera that had a microscopic eye on it that looked at four features of each ballot, the cross-hatched printed lines on the ballot to ensure that they aligned properly, to speak to the legitimacy of the ballot, the fibers in the ballot, the yellow dot watermarks present or not present in the ballot. And then, of course, what was most interesting to me was the oval bubble filled in ostensibly by the voter. It could be told if that was done by a human or not based on whether or not there was an indentation in the paper, because this was a three-dimensional microscopic examination of the ballot.
When those machines were looking, did you find any counterfeit ballots when they were examining those four areas?
Don't know yet. The report is not out yet, so that'll be ostensibly chronicled in the report. But I looked over the shoulder of people doing this, and you know, it was really a sight to see. These pieces of equipment were extraordinarily expensive. There was an entire area of the floor dedicated to this. It's very painstaking scrutiny involved. And then after the ballots, to your question, after the ballots finished being counted and recounted, then all efforts went to this forensic deep dive look with the microscopic camera, which is a lot more time consuming. So toward the end, to your point, more energy was then corralled and focused on to that, whereas at the beginning there was kind of a division of labor. But at the end, everybody was working on that.
And so are the auditors looking at every ballot that was cast in the state, or are they just,
That's my understanding, okay. Yes. Okay. No, every ballot. And everything, by the way, was videoed. So the entire floor of the operation was videoed live stream 24/7 with, I don't know, 13, 14 some cameras. And one could have tuned in on a link online at any time to have watched that. The other interesting facet was the fact that each workstation, each table, each area where the microscopic camera was operating had a top-down looking camera and a side-looking camera to chronicle everything. And then in the middle of the floor was this huge tower of computers that were hardwired in the facility. Nothing, by the way, was connectable to the internet outside. Anyway, this huge tower of storage of the data accumulated to over one petabyte, P as in Papa, petabyte, which is a lot of terabytes. And I'd never even heard that word before.
Me either.
And so, yeah, so it was extraordinary. We also had two or three lawyers, attorneys on the floor at all times. So we know that we're going to get sued. we know that it's going to be challenged. We knew all that. And so we forestalled those kinds of things from becoming an issue now in the future, now going forward, by taking those precautions. We also told the Arizona Secretary of State and any other naysayers, hey, come on down to the audit. You know, we're an open book. We're happy to have you come watch and get a briefing and walk around and see everything. And nary a response. And so we, members, senators, were told by Karen Fan, our colleague, Senator President Karen Fan, hey, guys, you know, you can go look at the audit. She issued that to us in May. So I was Johnny on the spot and went down there immediately and within 2 hours and got a full up one-on-one briefing from who I later found out that night was none other than CEO of the prime contractor Cyber Ninjas, Mr. Doug Logan. I didn't realize it was he spending an hour with, you know, little grandma from Flagstaff, Arizona, but there he was sitting with me going over everything. And I'm not a techie, you know, I was a jet pilot in the Air Force. Prior to that, my academic training is as a psychiatric social worker. I have a bachelor's and master's in social work. I was a social worker in the Air Force in mental health before I became a pilot, which was a real career change, by the way.
Yeah, that's a huge
only in the
change.
Military. Yeah, only in the military could you do something like that. But, yeah, so, you know, I don't have a tech background. I'm married to an electrical engineer with a software background, so I knew he would, my husband, who you met in North Carolina, I knew he was going to grill me like crazy when I got home that night. So, you know, I took copious notes, and I showed them to Doug and said, what can I publish? Because my people want to know what's going on down here. And he said, oh, okay, Senator, well, you know, you can say this, but don't say that because it's not public yet. And anyway, so I was very disappointed about it. And I did three of these, one-on-one after-action reports, and I was on the floor a lot interviewing people who were working there. And then about, I don't know, 3-4 weeks later, we got word that we were going to start hosting visitors from out of state, which was sort of a novel idea I didn't even know about. And we started having visitors from all these different states of state senators and state representatives. So this was a real eye-opener for me because you tend to kind of get tunnel-visioned and hunkered down in your own little world. And all of a sudden, we had all these counterparts of ours coming from the country in every day. Everyone from, you know, Vernon Jones running for governor in, excuse me, in Georgia, to Eric Greitens, who former governor of Missouri, who's running for U.S. Senate, and all these different pretty well-known people. And so I started taking them around and getting to know them. And the overwhelming reaction that they gave me was, oh, we're not moving ahead to 2022 until we find the truth of 2020. It is paramount. And it really put into focus how other state legislators felt around the country. So fast forward to August when I went to the 3-day cyber symposium in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, I saw a lot of these same people. And we coalesced at the end of the 3 days into what's now known as the Election Integrity Caucus of us state senators and state representatives. And it's building increasing every day. And this is because the U.S. Constitution says the state legislatures have the plenary power to oversee the U.S. presidential election. And a lot of people don't realize this. And why did the founders wisely set it up this way? It's because the state legislatures are closest to the people. And so here we are now with other states ginning up possible audits in their states or parts of their states. We also now separately have had a canvass in Maricopa County of some precincts. What is that? Is that related to the audit? No, It's a separate standalone effort that was undertaken by private citizens because we would have liked to have done a canvas within the audit contract, but we couldn't because the federal government was breathing down our necks and President Pham had to make a command decision. And to preserve and save the audit, we said we would not do a canvas. What is a canvas? A canvas is when, in this case, very astute volunteers went door to door and said, we've noticed that eight people voted here from this home. Are they all in residence here? And the respondent at the door would say, no, I'm the only one who's lived here for 20 years. Oh, really? Okay, so boom, that's eight ghost votes, as it were. Or they'd go to an empty lot where allegedly, you know, dozens of people voted from, and it'd be an empty lot. So what they did, this canvassing group of citizens compiled a report that showed over 200,000 questionable votes cast, essentially, in this Maricopa County component of the U.S. presidential election. That, as your listeners may know, came out about, I don't know, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. So you asked me, well, how does that dovetail with what will come out in the audit? Folks, it's kind of like the four Gospels, okay? They each tell the story from a different perspective, but they fit together to uniformly come out with the same conclusion of the story. And so that's kind of how I look at the canvas and the audit. They dovetail, they interlock to tell the same conclusive story.
Senator, if I can interrupt you, is the audit just Maricopa County or is it all of Arizona?
Oh, it's just Maricopa County. It's 2.1 million ballots. And we have 15 counties. I represent parts of four other counties. Maricopa County is the bulk of the votership. It's 2.1 million ballots.
Mm. And who funds this? Is the legislature or the state funding this audit and canvas?
No, we've had private donations. And I don't quote me on this. I'm not sure if some component of it was paid for by the state. I'm not sure. But suffice to say, it was an expensive undertaking. It got more expensive as time went on because the county was so obstructionist. At first, they said, oh, you know, you can do your analysis right here at the county. And then they reneged and said, no, we don't want this in our county, on our county premises. And then they tried to dump the ballots on us to then violate the chain of custody. We were apparently able to forestall that, and we maintained the chain of custody. It was one shenanigan after the next. We were taken to court four times, and we were upheld four times to be able to continue the audit. It was these supervisors are absolutely running for cover. They know something's wrong. They know they messed up. And if you ask me, well, did they purposely cheat? I mean, the report will determine that. But I kind of describe it as death by a thousand cuts. You have pre-cheating, cooking of the books of the voter roll that goes on year after year, month after month, especially in urban areas. And then you have during the election season cheating with, you know, ineptitude, complacency, sloppiness. And then you have intentional stuff going on, like the supervisors having put out, or rather one of the election officials in the county having put out a memo to all the election officials saying, oh, issue a ballpoint pen to people who come in to vote prior to election day, but issue Sharpie felt tip markers on election day.
So you can tell the difference.
This show is brought to you by Generous Joe's. the coffee company with the Christian perspective. This is the answer that Christians and conservatives have been looking for. A coffee company that gives back to causes you care about. Order your coffee today at shopgenerousjoes.org and even subscribe to a subscription coffee plan and never forget the coffee you love or the causes you care about.
Well, yeah, but it's also because who votes on who said as a group they were going to wait till election day to vote?
Republicans.
Yeah. Because they knew that they couldn't trust the mail. Witness California yesterday, which is a complete cheat. We all know it. And so, Republicans made it very clear, hey, I'm going to either walk in to the polling location on election day or hand carry my ballot or whatever, because I don't trust prior to election day. I knocked, Chris, 17,000 doors in northern Arizona over the span of many, many months. I'm kind of legendary for that. And in the last 3 weeks of my door knocking, I did, well, you know, you shift, right? So when you first door knock, you go to people in your primary voting field, Republicans. And then in the general, I went to independents because we have a huge amount of independents in northern Arizona. And then in the last 3 weeks, I went to people who, according to the computer, had not sent in their ballot yet. So I went to all these people's homes, and I'd say, hey, I'm Wendy Rogers. Oh, cool, you're on my doorstep. And I'd say, yeah, it shows here that you didn't vote yet. I'm just saying we need to turn out the vote. Please vote. And they go, oh, Wendy, I'm not voting till election day. I heard that overwhelmingly. And that was independents and Republicans. So that bespeaks the fact that that group of type of voter, waited till election day. Maricopa County knew this. So that's why they put that missive out to do Sharpie. So, you know, that is, I mean, for all intents and purposes, conspiratorial. But I think a lot of it is just sloppiness. We've never audited before, which is really incredible if you think about it. Every profession known to man is auditable except our election, and yet that's forms the bedrock of our democracy. I mean, what is wrong with that picture, right?
Yeah.
So absolutely, I encourage everyone to do an audit of any county that has had the machine. And of late, I encourage citizens to do canvassing.
Well, what's going to happen? You said the canvassers found, and we've only got a few more minutes here, but in one case, maybe hundreds of people on an empty lot. Are those thrown out? Or are they still being counted?
Well, apparently they were counted. I mean, it's hard to say. What it does is it calls into question the result. And if the result is called into question, then it's on us, state legislators, to call for decertification of what was turned in to the federal government as far as certification was concerned back in January. So
are you legally allowed to decert? So let's say the audit comes back and shows fraud or whatever. Is there a time limit, or can you still decertify those votes?
We can absolutely decertify. We should decertify. I've already said to decertify for my part in the state Senate and the state House. And so it's on us, after all the findings are rendered, to say as an individual, decertify. And that's what other states can do. The hope is that we decertify in Arizona, and then other states follow suit.
So, Senator, let's just say, for the sake of conversation, if enough states decertified or there were enough votes where it did turn the tide, let's say, of the presidential election, what would happen? Does the Congress have to ignore it, or are they forced to move forward and do something?
The Congress can then decide to have one vote per state per the Constitution to elect the president again. It's right there in the Constitution. Each state has either a Republican or a Democrat majority in its state legislature, which then defines that state as quote unquote Republican or Democrat. And right now there's a majority of quote unquote Republican states based on the compositions of their state legislatures. And that's prescribed in the Constitution. This is uncharted waters, yeah. And we don't know. People ask me this all the time, you know, what could happen. I don't really know. I will tell you that my job is twofold. Number one, find the truth of 2020. And number two, enact legislative bills when we go back into session in January. We're a part-time legislature. To forestall this from happening again in 2022. We have a late primary. It's in August. I'm not sure when North Carolina's is. I think it's kind of late, too.
No, it's March here.
Oh, March. Never mind then. But, you know, for us, we have a timetable to work with to enact legislation. So that's really sort of the corollary, the follow-on. But the preeminent job as a state legislature, for me, as a state legislator, is to get to the bottom of the truth of 2020.
Yeah.
And then come what may on each step taken after that in terms of, you know, how we navigate this with the U.S. Constitution.
Well, Senator, I want to thank you for what you're doing, because it's not just for the citizens of Arizona, but you're leading the fight across the country for people to take a closer look at what happened in the election, and more importantly, to be ready in the future to prevent voter fraud and to fight for voter integrity. Before we sign off, can you give us our website where people can follow you and learn more what happens in this process?
Yes, I encourage every one of you to please go to my website to sign the petition to decertify the presidential election. So this is what you do. You go to wendyrogers.org. So it's simply my name, Wendy, like the hamburgers, W-E-N-D-Y, Rogers, like Mr. Rogers, R-O-G-E-R-S.org, wendyrogers.org. And in the upper right corner of the landing page is a link. I want you to please click on that link to sign to decertify the presidential election of 2020. It is a national petition. It is symbolic in nature, but it is hugely powerful because we want 1 million signatures on that petition. And at last count, we had over 900,000 signatures. This is a huge way for you to be counted, to be down and known as someone who disapproves, would elect to decertify if you were an elected official. This is you being able to say, I think we should decertify the presidential election of 2020. So go to wendyrogers.org, upper right corner, click sign to decertify so that you can be heard. I really would appreciate it. You would be joining all these hundreds of thousands of Americans from across the country.
Well, folks, you heard it. Thank you, Senator Rogers, for being with us today. Go to wendyrogers.org and sign the petition to decertify the presidential election. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me today. I'm Chris Hughes, and this is The Christian Perspective. Please subscribe and like our podcast and share it with your friends on social media. Now let's go impact the culture for Jesus.
Thank you for listening. The Christian Perspective with Chris Hughes. Learn more about impacting the culture for Jesus. Visit ChristianPerspective.us.
This show is brought to you by Generous Joe's, the coffee company with the Christian perspective. This is the answer that Christians and conservatives have been looking for. A coffee company that gives back to causes you care about. Order your coffee today at ShopGenerousJoes.org. And even subscribe to a subscription coffee plan and never forget the coffee you love or the causes you care about.
This is the Truth Network.
Say, what would you do if you were a new Christian and you didn't have a Bible? It's Michael Woolworth, by the way, from Bible League International, and you'd probably say, well, I'd hop in my car, I'd go to a Christian bookstore, or I'd have one shipped to me. What if those weren't options? You'd say, well, I'm new to the faith. I need to know what it means to grow in the grace and knowledge of Jesus. You know, you would pray that someone, anyone, would bring you a Bible. And that's exactly the way it is for literally millions of Christians around the world. They're part of our spiritual family. They're new to the faith. They want to know what it means to grow in the grace and knowledge of Jesus. But God has them planted where it's very difficult able to access a Bible. And that's why the Truth Network and Bible League have teamed up to send God's Word to 3,500 Bibleist believers around the globe. Our campaign is called The World Needs the Word. $5 sends a Bible, $100 sends 20, every gift matched. Make your most generous gift by calling 800-YES-WORD, 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 or give at truthnetwork.com.